at different schools around the country, I think it's wonderful that we have something in this effort toward at Arizona State University. With that, we will turn the time over to our presenters. We're having some problems with this microphone. They wanted to just sit and talk and be informal, but it's getting a lot of feedback, and so we're going to try to just leave it stationary and see how they want to work this out.
I'm Laura Bush, the Laura Bush, right? and just thank you for coming. I assume that many of you are in some way teachers or interested in teaching, and that's why you're at this session. I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about how we thought we would run this and how we've decided to break it up, because we only have 50 minutes. We'd like to be able to have some questions from you. And then Doe and I are going to just speak back and forth based on that organization. We don't really want to go halfsies, all right? And then we want to have some time for you to ask some questions as well at the end. I'm not sure how that works with the taping, but we're going to do it anyway, all right? So the first thing that I'd like you to understand is that we see the purpose of this session as to explain the unique challenges of teaching a class in Mormonism at a large public university. I used to teach at Ricks College, now BYU, Idaho, and there are certain challenges teaching, of course, in the church educational system, but this is at a large public university in what we would consider a secondary Mormon cultural region. And then we want to provide a few insights about the strategies for dealing with those challenges of teaching in such a context, and things that we did, and also challenges that we still face and we haven't necessarily found the answers to, but that the dilemmas remain. All right. So what we would like to do is divide this session into three sections. We're going to first talk about the context a little bit of the class itself, a little bit about the syllabus and how it was developed very briefly. Then we want to discuss the issue of identity in the classroom. Identity was one of the six themes that Doe decided upon to base the class around, to structure the class around. And I want to make clear also, this to me was really Doe's class. I'm an instructional professional and I consulted with Doe, and I'll talk a little bit about my background and how and why it was particularly important and helpful for me to be consulting with her as an instructional professional working in the center. The fact that I am a Mormon and do Mormon studies, number one. But I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the section on identity. But this is her course, and I facilitated several times in the class, but it was mainly her course. So we'll talk about context, identity, and then the final thing that we thought we would talk about is the texts themselves that we chose, how and why we chose the texts, and how I influenced some of the texts choosing too. My background is in English, hers is in religious studies. So we thought that those things would probably be of most interest, and as we talk about those three sections, context, identity, and text, we're going to try to let you get a brief idea about several key assignments that Doe made for students and what the strengths of them were, what the challenges and problems of them were, maybe a little bit about how we might revise in the future. But this is a course, and this is the beginning of Mormon studies in many ways at Arizona State, and it's in embryo. We're in process. So the course has been taught twice, fall and spring, and she'll begin and tell you a bit more about it.
When you're presenting early in the morning, anything that can go wrong will definitely go wrong. I like the university server being down in the middle of the night and things like that. In any case, I like Laura said, we really had hoped that this would be like a conversation. I realized after we got here that the program lists this as a paper, and it's definitely not papers. That's not what we did at all. As Tom indicated, I teach in the Department of Religious Studies at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. The university is about 5 minutes away from Mesa, 10 minutes away from Gilbert, which is the newest kind of Mormon enclave in the Phoenix area. So the university is located in a secondary LDS cultural setting, and like Mesa Community College, has a significant LDS student population. Up to now, it's been very, very inexpensive to go to school at ASU. Many of the college-level students in my ward start at Mesa Community College and/or ASU. You know, take courses at both on both campuses. The LDS Church operates a very large institute program out of a very large building on ASU campus. It has its own dedicated parking lot. And I don't know how many of you work at or are familiar with public universities and the difficulties of parking in these locations. And and it's very interesting that the LDS Institute has this very, very nice and a very prime location on campus, a very nice dedicated parking lot. Religious Studies is located in a not-so-nice building on the very same street, and it caters to a large population, large student population, because so many of its classes fulfill general studies requirements. So it has a very large faculty and associate faculty base to teach these huge courses, survey courses for general studies students. The department offers specialties in American, East Asian, and Islamic religions at the undergraduate, master's, and doctoral levels. And my department felt that it was important. I guess their awareness was raised. They'd had several students, like Dan Watherspoon. He and I were a decade apart, I believe, though of course I'm much older than he is. We shared the same thesis advisor. And but there are not that many LDS students doing graduate level work at ASU in religious studies. But my thesis really, I think, raised their awareness. And with their efforts to generate this PhD program, they were trying, you know, to figure out ways to bring more interest to religious studies at ASU, and they wanted me to develop this course, and so I pretty much was given a free rein to do whatever I wanted to do. I was given literally no structure at all. I chose to structure the course as a current issues course primarily because that's my interest. I mean, I recognize the importance of history, and of course the course involves history, but that's not my primary interest. I'm interested in religion and the cultural and the contemporary context. The other major decision I made was to structure the course thematically. I intended to highlight critical themes or categories to the discipline of religious studies that also can reveal something then about Mormonism. So a thematic approach allowed us to look at core Mormon doctrines through time and to see how the concepts inform the practice of Mormonism today. The themes I used were these: identity, bodies or embodiment, history, power, and authority, social issues / conflict, and modernity / globalization. My goals for the course were for students to be able to A, develop tolerance for different worldviews, hopefully. That's what religious studies, one of its general goals. Develop critical thinking and writing skills, especially in the area of religious studies. So if they've developed these skills to any extent in any other setting, to be able to bring those to religious studies, to the study of religion in a secular setting, may be more difficult for some students. And to also to expand insider and outsider views about past and present Mormon identity. I started out the class by saying Mormon identity is not monolithic. Whatever you think Mormon identity is, I promise you, I will try to dissuade you of that one stereotypical concept of what a Mormon looks like, acts like, talks like, thinks like, and how that person interprets their and practices their religion. Each of these categories built on each other so that I started out talking in general about identity. In Mormonism, identity, to a great extent, whether you're talking about deity or human beings, is based on or has to do with embodiment. We have an embodied God. We believe that you know, that we will be resurrected and rejoined with our bodies, and that we will become gods ourselves. That's all about embodiment, and so that's how I built. And then, of course, how do we work all this out? We work this out through our history as theology. And so all of that built, all of those categories built on each other. So that identity was the overarching theme that gets articulated through history, the LDS theology of embodiment, and I developed assessments that would require students to think critically and creatively, to compare and contrast, and to analyze current events. So some of... So on the syllabus, what I told them is this. This course identifies and explores current issues in Mormonism through the theoretical lens of religious studies in order to get a better understanding of Mormonism and its adherents' worldviews. And I told them about the categories. Despite the focus on contemporary themes, students will also get a foundation of the historic beginnings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This is a revision of my syllabus from the first semester. I didn't realize that there would be so many students who really did not know who or what Mormons were that were there at ASU. And so I was just going to give this kind of brief historical contextual thing, and that wasn't enough. And so I had to go back and, I had no intention of making this a Mormonism 101 course. I made that clear from the beginning. This is a current issues course. But I had to go back and alter that and make it a little bit about 101. I told them that it was going to be a small class, so it had to be interactive. They had to participate. And I told them that the course was going to evolve based on what was happening at the moment in the LDS world. I made them do news article analyses. They were sent out to find news articles in major media venues, and then I gave them a rubric to a set of questions to answer and to analyze these articles to find out what was happening in Mormon lives and what then were they to make of that. And I told them what religious studies, the purpose of religious studies was, which is to, it requires us to look at religion in a scholarly and humanistic way. And so the syllabus states, you may not be used to reading or thinking about religion in this way. It may be difficult to separate your analysis from your personal beliefs and feelings. You may even be offended. Please remember that what we are seeking in this course is not a real revelation of religious truth, or the value of one tradition over another, but rather an understanding of how religion plays out in the diverse lives of real people. So I told them about Mormonism. Mormonism is a world religion, gave them a historical background, and I told them about why these categories were important. As with any religion, when studying Mormonism, it is important to look beyond institutional proclamations of belief and ideals of practice to discover the various voices that make up the Mormon experience. So identity is varied and complicated. It's not just about what people say on fast and testimony meetings. And so I made it clear, it is true that Mormonism provides members with a strong ethnic identity that transcends local, cultural, economic, and geographic diversity. Nevertheless, it is difficult to identify a truly more monolithic Mormon identity. Rather, Mormons are a highly varied group with regard to interpretations of doctrine, belief, and practice. In addition, faithful Mormons may be male, female, heterosexual, gay, lesbian, or transgendered, conservative, liberal, or feminist. They may believe in the Book of Mormon as an historical document, or they may see it as a creative, non-historical product of Joseph Smith's cultural time and place. And we talked about the role of media and publishing, because publishing is kind of one of my related fields. And so I wanted them to, one of the very first assignments I gave them was to analyze the church's website. And what I asked them to do was, I just gave them four simple questions. What kinds of things do you find there? What did you learn about Mormons or Mormonism from the site that you didn't already know? What issues can you tell that the LDS Church is concerned with based on your exploration of the sites? What do you see there? What do they care about? What are the current institutional current issues or concerns? And what do you think are the limitations of the site? It was interesting to me the number of LDS students in both semesters who said, there are no limitations to the site. That was interesting. I mean, they found it very difficult to critique that particular, the church's website. Oh, geez, this is not working. Okay. In terms of my identity, because identity is was and is the overarching, to me, theme in a study of Mormonism, I thought I would tell you a little bit about my identity, why that was important, and explain why the title of this discussion is as it is. There's a meaning to that. It really was a love and hate proposition for me. I found my own identity as a Mormon, as a feminist, and as, you know, as an associate faculty in the Department of Religious Studies, very complicated. I was new to teaching. It was my first semester teaching. I'd had very little, well, not really any instruction. I mean, they just said, do this, have fun, come back and report. And so I was asked to develop this. There was another professor, a wonderful professor, Richard Wentz, who is an Americanist and taught during my time as a student, taught a course in Mormonism, but it was basically using the standard works, one of the Toscano's books, and a couple of other, you know, Sterling McMurrin, one of his books, and so it was totally different from what I was trying to develop. And so Laura, on the other hand, was new to religious studies, but had a lot of experience in teaching. And so I went to her as an instructional professional to, you know, go over my syllabus. It was quite a bit after the fact, so it wasn't like she, you know, I could change anything at that point. But I wanted her to come and share her insights because of the writing and the research she had done on Mormon women's on embodiment the first semester, and the second semester she talked about, came and did a synthesis basically through Terry Tempest Williams' Refuge. In religious studies, it is very uncharacteristic, as in I'm assuming most other disciplines, to self to reveal one's religious identity in the classroom, unless of course you're at a private university that's sponsored by a religious group. I was told by several faculty members that it could be very useful to me to reveal my identity as an LDS person. Of course, many of the students already knew that I was. Because they'd come to my thesis defense, I even had my daughter's seminary teacher came to my thesis defense. And so it wasn't as if I could really hide that. But they told me that it would be useful, and I did find that that aspect of my identity was useful. I was able, when we got to the discussion about Lamanite identity, and there was some dispute in the classroom as to, oh no, the church really doesn't, members of the church don't really, there's no discrimination, there's really no conflict between Lamanite identity and they're not like two classes of Mormons, one's Lamanite and one's, or, you know, divisions of Mormons. And I said, well, that's interesting, because I had this experience on Sunday, and it was very serendipitous that I had been to church the previous Sunday, and then there was a gentleman out in the foyer in between meetings talking with us, a group of us, and saying, I have to rush home and put on my clown suit. I didn't know he was a clown. Because I have to go do a birthday party for this very sweet Lamanite family. And everybody smiled, and they're so sweet, and they're this great Lamanite family. And I said, at least to this one gentleman, this family is not either Hopi or Navajo or Pima or any of the other gazillion distinct tribal groups that live, you know, that live in the Phoenix area. this individual's family was a Lamanite family. And so, but it was really very useful for me to be able to then go in and say, yeah, but wait a minute, let's problematize this, and I have an experience that I can share with you that will show you how complicated this is and how problematic it is to call somebody a Lamanite and to think in terms of this Book of Mormon identity, this global Book of Mormon indigenous identity. However, it was very painful. I found that students wanted me to tell them what doctrine was, and I didn't know. I found it very difficult to negotiate how I dressed, the kind of contact that I had with students, whether they were LDS or not, the kinds of one thing that I was never that I did refuse to do was to offer them any information about my own spiritual practice or whether or not how active I was. I knew they were burning to know, but I wasn't willing. I just, you know, whenever I could add something based on my own experience, I was able to do that. So that is my identity, and that's why it was a love-hate relationship. I agonized through all the way through both semesters just feeling like I wanted to die many times because it was so anxiety-producing for me on a personal level to try to figure out how to negotiate my ambivalence, my anger, and not let that bleed out into the classroom, whatever anger I might have felt over any particular issue. Laura, however, has a different story, and I will let her tell her story now about her identity and how it informed her participation in the class.
The difficulty of your teacherly identity in the classroom, well, is twofold at this large public university. At Ricks College, part of the... I am so sorry about this constant ringing. I wish we could do something about it. In fact, we must. I'm trying to figure out how I can do that. Don't talk into it. Can you hear me? Okay. So, when I was a faculty member at Ricks College for 5 years, I didn't have to ask myself the question, do I reveal at any, and at what moment do I talk to this student audience about my religious identity? That was a moot point. What you're dealing with, of course, is your authority to teach the course, and when you talk about or reveal your social identity in the classroom, you're asking yourself questions, too, about how you're either establishing or undermining that authority. Students have identities also, right? So I establish my authority to speak about Mormonism with Mormon students, in many ways, by simply saying I'm a Mormon. So in that way, they know, and it's true for non-Mormon audiences as well. If you're a Mormon, if you are that class of individual, then somehow you have credibility and authority to speak on the issues. But then, especially for Mormons in the classroom, and this became what I think was the emotional element to this class and something that I think any person continuing to teach or about to teach at Arizona State or some place like that is the hostility or the aggression and the resistance that the Mormon students have towards what kind of a Mormon are you and what kinds of conversations and how do you elicit those in the classroom? Because there really was, when I went to those classroom to facilitate a discussion on Phyllis Barber's a chapter called The Rose in her autobiography, and it's about the ritual of the rose where you're trying to get young women not to be handled like the rose that gets passed around the room. When I went to speak about that issue, I knew there were, I had a sense that there were Mormons and non-Mormons in this audience, and how was I going to deal with that? And what were the challenges of that? So the dilemma is when to reveal that aspect and the background and identity and how those decisions either establish or undermine my authority, both to Mormons and non-Mormons, and they respond differently. Mormons in particular want to know what kind of Mormon you are if you do or do not reveal that. When I went to her classroom, I allowed Doe simply to establish my authority or speak about me. I didn't want to address that. I didn't feel that I had to, in one sense. Because she said, Laura's writing this book, and it was before my book, Faithful Transgressions, was published, the first time I came into her book, her classroom. But when I came in the second time, she had me facilitate on a night in which she was going to be talking about power and authority, and my book in particular is talking about power and authority. So I was able to refer to that book at that moment. Okay.
We're getting terrible feedback.
Oh,
really? Okay.
So the issue of my identity became particularly important to those students, and especially to the Mormon students, about what kind of Mormon I was. I got to know Doe. She hasn't told you yet that her thesis was about Mother in Heaven, and that I had gone to her particular thesis and been quite impressed with the kind of work that she was doing there, and then we established that relationship. So I knew that she was doing that. But of course, I am a feminist Mormon, and that became key and led to some hostility later, too. But it was different from the kind of hostility that I had at Ricks College. So I'll let Doe talk about the student identities.
The very first assignment, along with the website analysis that I asked students to do, was a personal statement. And so I instructed them, and I used a picture of the Dalai Lama and what he would say. I'm coming to Phoenix and to see you. I asked them to provide a picture of themselves and to tell me at least one thing that they wanted me to know about them. What was fascinating to me, or shouldn't have surprised me, but I was in under such stress to get everything together that I really hadn't thought about it that much. The non-LDS students did not reveal anything about their religious background. Some of them did, but for the most part they didn't. For example, one student wrote, I try to live with no regrets, just live and learn from good and bad accomplishments and mistakes. She told me her favorite color, her birthday, her astrological sign, her favorite stone, her favorite animal, how her personality is. She's a leader. She has a strong ego. She's happy. She's thankful. She loves tigers. She has a tattoo. And however, all of the LDS students wanted to tell me where they'd served their missions, that they were married in the temple, or that they were, you know, kind of what ward they were attending. This gentleman says, I was born, and he tells me when, I was like every other Mormon kid growing up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, until I left home at 17 and moved to Arizona. Instead of his goal, what he'd gone there for, I found my wife, and we were married upon the completion of my two-year mission for the church. I'm now at ASU trying to determine if I want to major in religious studies or history. Another young guy said, my name is, I play guitar in a band called, I served in the Philippines, Quezon City, oh no, that's French, sorry, quite, I don't know, I'm a psych major and I love going to BYU. So identity, the LDS students' identity was very important to them. Their religious identity was important in this classroom, and it seemed to me as if they really came to the class. Many of them had never been in a religious studies class, so they didn't know how to negotiate. They didn't know how to talk about their religion in this particular setting, in a secular setting. And they came to it kind of as they would an institute class. And many of our discussions ended up sounding very much like testimony meetings. And so their identities as Mormons got expressed very strongly. Some were more aggressive than others. The first semester was much more of a balance between non-LDS and LDS, with some apostates thrown in for good measure for the center. But the second semester was highly skewed to the LDS side, and most of them were male, and they were highly, what I would call aggressive. They weren't physically aggressive, but they were verbally aggressive. And And so that's how their LDS identity played out in that particular classroom. Oh, there it is. Sorry. One of the other assignments that I gave them was to weekly basis to ask a question or to tell me what the most significant thing that they had done, that they had read, what was the most significant thing to them about the reading and the discussion that we did this at the end of class, and to ask a question that had remained unanswered or, you know, that hadn't been discussed at all. And one student said... So their identities came out in the things that they said. This one gentleman, and this was really the most aggressive student, and he was very likable. It wasn't that he was not likable, but he was just very persistent. And this was during the authority week, but this is how his identity got expressed. When I raise my hand and confirm that I will support my church leaders, I don't question what they ask me to do. That was the way he fulfilled the assignment for that week. And his question was, who or what are you really questioning when you go against the church's authority? Well, to be honest, when I got these, I after the fact, the first semester, I used these to start out the next class session. Then I picked out ones that seemed really. I mean, we could have spent the whole, you know, hour and a half going from these journals. And so I picked two or three, and I would answer their questions or ask other students if they wanted to take a stab at answering them and discuss them. And that worked really well. I basically used this as attendance during the second semester because the responses I got were so distressing and anxiety-producing for me that I pretty much read them and made notes, and did a couple of times that, where I started the class saying, oh, I really enjoyed your journals. Let's look at some of these questions and at some of these issues. But for the most part, I just threw in little pieces. Oh, I noticed somebody in your journal. And I basically, perhaps it's my youth as an instructor, clearly I'm an old lady, but first-time teacher, I found it very difficult to know how to, in the midst of everything else, to respond to some of these questions. I think that the question, Holly, that you're asking is important, and I'm starting to feel like that's what I want to do with this session a little bit, too, is you probably get a sense of some of the dilemmas. And when I went into the classroom and talked about power and authority, I had to, on the fly, I realized, figure out what is going to be my strategy to address this issue. And I think it's a strategy that I could share with people who may be teaching then in religious studies. We were talking about power and authority, and what happens for Mormons, and I think this is a tradition of Mormons, is that Mormons want to defend the religion, or they're resistant to any critique of the religion. So the question came up, and we started to get into a debate, or the students started to get into the debate about women, why women don't have the priesthood, and whether women have power and authority or not in the classroom. And one of the female students, was insisting, of course, that she did have power as a Mormon woman. I think that what has to happen in this classroom in the future, too, is that there needs to be a bit more structure on what the objectives of the assignments are and how to control or facilitate discussions. But what I did on the fly was I stopped them at that moment from participating in that particular debate. Said, this debate has raged, and any other debate that might have come up about blacks in the priesthood, for example, whether that was racist or not.
And I said, instead, why does the question and the debate continue? Or why, let's talk about why this particular question even occurs about whether women have power or not in the Mormon Church. So it is not the debate and the question itself, but why the question occurs. And so that disallowed them from debating the point and got them to really examining the issues. If the question occurs, then it must point towards an important issue or lack in the church. If women are continuing to debate this, and Mormons have to continue to debate outside of whether they have power, whether they have been raised or not, why is that? Now that stopped them, because then they didn't have to defend their Mormonism or explain their Mormonism to other people or to themselves. Because that's what they've been trained and conditioned to do, of course, when it comes to religion, especially the Mormon students. And quite frankly, the second semester, it really was dominated by some very vocal students. So the non-Mormon students couldn't even engage in a kind of interesting examination of this religion. But that then prevented her. So she had to say, oh, why does this exist? Well, it must mean that there is some lack of equal distribution of power in the church. There has to be some lack of distribution. And when I could get to those questions and we could debate that, then we had a very productive discussion about power and authority in the church. So the strategy that I, on the fly, kind of had to happen, because I could see that we were going to get into this struggle, was stop talking about that particular issue and start talking about why we're having that issue or why the debate exists. And then you start to get to the underlying assumptions and claims, and you're able to uncover it, and they're able to do that, and then they stop participating in that. I wanted to also just very quickly read a couple of comments, too, and I think that what I would consult with Doe a little bit more is I think that her journaling exercise at the end of class, essentially what she had them do, is write responses to the issues and themes that occurred in the class that day. What I would have Doe do is structure that much more, so that she was getting them to think critically about particular questions rather than having a free-for-all. I think there was too much free-for-all. They hadn't yet learned to think critically in many ways about religious studies or about their own religion, to be given in one sense a kind of free rein about the issues. Now, she did structure many things, and she would keep going back to the issues, but I think if there was more structure in the kinds of questions that she would ask at the end of the period about power and authority, you know, rather than just what did you learn today. But this was a response, for example: power and authority is central to the church's identity. Its credibility and foundation lies in its claims to authority. Now that's true. From outsiders, it looks like a big, scary system of control. But what does the priesthood actually control? And then this person's questions on the back, so there's this statement: what does priesthood control? Do feminists think God is sexist? Now, what that student is doing is trying to make a point. These aren't genuine questions in many ways, all right? So I would push her to ask probably more carefully defined questions about at the end of a class period, rather than having them do a free-for-all. I like the discussion we had today about the book Refuge. I especially enjoyed the topic on women and the authority. We continue to see the issue on women obtaining the priesthood. I don't think that that is going to happen, because the beliefs are the destiny, and I think if women are given the priesthood, that will entirely change the destiny of men and women with respect to the beliefs of the church. Why do you think the belief will change? Okay. That's the kind of thing that continued to happen, and so you have to keep chipping away. And I think a teacher going into this kind of environment has to know that that's going to happen and put greater parameters. But Doe really did try to work on what is religious studies. Now, I'm going to let her finish up a little bit with identity, and then we're going to go to texts. And I'm going to tell you what I learned and discovered about and the kinds of texts I was suggesting to have her use in the classroom, and what the students, how the students were reading them, and what I felt were the skills that they needed to have and they needed to learn through the classroom.
I really think I don't have that much more to say about identity. I'd like just to go on and because we're running out of time, I wanted to tell you about which text I actually did choose to use. I chose the Ostling's text, Mormon America, Douglas Davies' Mormon Culture of Salvation, Maxine Hank's Women in Authority, various Sunstone Art and Dialogue articles, the Phyllis Barber essay, Colleen McDaniel's Material Christianity, pulled in all kinds of extra reading for them. The second semester, I dropped Women in Authority. Although they loved it, I guess I'm perpetually wanting to do something new. I dropped Women in Authority. I dropped Davies' Mormon Culture of Salvation. I think it's one of the most brilliant books on Mormonism that's been, the most insightful book on Mormonism that's been written by a non-LDS scholar. But he has, it was very dense. It was a graduate level book. I didn't do that again. They hated that book. They couldn't read it, most of them, except for the religious studies majors, because they knew how to think about it. Douglas Davies has a brand new one out called An Introduction to Mormonism, I believe. And so I went with that, sight unseen. I just figured it had to be good because I love his writing. I kept Ostling, and those were my two main texts for this. Yeah. Oh, and Refuge. I decided to do Refuge. And the reasons that I chose these particular books, like I said, I think Davies is brilliant. If you know, look into him, his insights into what it means to see, which is my main interest in religious studies, is religious seeing, religious vision, what that means through the language of iconography and that. How it's generative, and so he really has his finger on what it means to see, how important vision is and seeing is in Mormonism. I chose Ostling. It's not, of course, it's a popular text. It's not a scholarly text, but I felt like, man, did it hit on all of the issues, and it complicated the issues, and it also allowed me to say, so what's the difference between this book and this other book? Obviously, the Hanks book provides access to women's voices that are absent pretty much virtually from all other texts, unless you get like Davies. He provides basically the institutional, because even though he's not LDS, he does have a relationship with the church. And so the Sunstone articles were especially useful, especially the one, and I didn't bring it, and it's completely lapsed out of my memory, but one from several years ago where the gentleman who was bishop of the San Francisco gay and lesbian ward, for want of a better term, that was incredible. They were blown away by that article. And so Sunstone played a key role in teaching this course, in providing this kind of, problematizing these issues. I also brought in speakers. I brought in a Native American gentleman who is a religious studies major and who is also gay. He came in to speak the first semester. I brought in a friend of ours from the Phoenix area Mormon feminist women's group that we get together every month and talk. She is a Relief Society president. She came in and talked about a workshop that she had been to that the church had given to talk about the church's new understanding of homosexuality. She was an incredible text, an incredible resource, and the students really responded to her. She actually sat in on the course the first semester, and so every week I got to benefit from this. So bringing in these kinds of speakers and these kinds of texts were really important to me. I also had them reading, of course, the church's website as text. I routinely printed out, when we went to embodiment, I went to the church's website, Basic Beliefs, and printed out for them and gave them little packets of church material. Here is the institutional answer to the question of what embodiment means and how bodies get expressed through the institutional Mormon view. So the church website was an incredibly valuable text. And they felt like they were getting the word right from the horse's mouth. It wasn't just me telling them. So I let the church tell them use anything like that the first semester. But I had seen the success. I'd gotten good evaluations from students. The department was happy. So I chose Refuge because I saw in Refuge a synthesis of all of these categories that were critical to religious studies, critical to the study of Mormonism. And I'm going to let Laura finish up talking about that.
The thing that you're trying to do with students when they're reading text is, of course, in many ways, get them from simply summarizing and knowledge gathering to some analysis of the text and have some kind of skill in breaking the text apart, making interpretive comments and such. When the majority of texts that Doe was using were essentially nonfiction prose essay, and the church website explanatory stuff, which in many ways that sometimes leads readers to simply say, I'm getting information here and I just need to learn this information. It's just knowledge that I'm getting rather than something that I'm interpreting, which is what Doe was working towards doing. The complication that I added with autobiography then, they had to learn also another skill, that is, how do you read autobiographical text? What are you doing when you do literary critique, and how does that differ from simply reading maybe an essay by Osling in which they're discussing the history of the church or giving you information or an explanation about why the blacks and the priesthood, why that was an issue or that phenomenon. So I'm trying to get them to move beyond that. So I suggested that Doe use a text like Phyllis Barber's in her discussion on the rose to talk about bodies and how a Mormon talks about bodies in an autobiography, and then to interpret that. One of the exercises that I had them do, it's called a note card exercise. I pulled out three to four passages from Barber's chapter. Each person, I put them on a note card, put them in groups of four. I gave them 2 minutes individually to respond to the passage, and then in a round-robin fashion, they would read the passage, read the sentence that I was trying to help them zero in on so that they simply weren't brushing their eyes. They were going to have to stop, slow down their reading, and interpret the passage, then explain that to other students in the classroom, what their passage meant to them. And so, for example, this was a passage from that text. She looked at us rather sternly. No one, I repeat, no one wants a used rose. Now keep in mind that they have read the whole chapter, but I'm trying to zero them in and get them to analyze rather than just talk about what was this chapter about. Your husband will want a girl who's fresh as the morning dew, sparkling alive, brand new. Don't let the boys handle your body. Don't let them touch you in private places. Those places are yours to save for the man who will be your husband. Now what's happening there with this text is essentially illustrating. We're putting them in the lives of Mormons. They might have been speaking in some ways, kind of distanced ways, but by bringing in autobiographical text and then asking them to read that, it's illustrating in a very real way, an embodied way, and somebody's talking about bodies here. Now, one student to me, her response to this was merely summary. To me, the author of this passage is saying that girls' husbands should not be a virgin. When what she was trying to implant in the girls' head is to save themselves for that special man that was going to be their husband. She wanted them to be pure and innocent. That, you say to a student, yes, so what? That you're stating the obvious at that point. Other students, though, and this is what I would do in the classroom to keep pushing, say something interpretive. I have been through a few of the sessions with roses and gardenias. Like Phyllis, I preferred yellow as well. Like her, I grew up in the Las Vegas area the same time she did, although I didn't know her. My experiences and experimentation were similar to her as a young girl and teen, being felt was not all it was crept up to be, but the propaganda about purity and keeping the temple clean worked for me. This passage depicts the double standard in society of the time. Now she's starting to interpret, and I would reinforce and work with that idea. Boys were not responsible for their sexual feelings. The worst thing you could do was masturbate. Most girls did not know what the word meant, even if they did it themselves. This person is starting to go beyond the text, and that's what I would have wanted them to do. and to keep pushing them to get students to do more, to start interpreting, evaluating, and analyzing, and not just knowledge-gathering experience. People who are non-Mormons in this classroom, of course, are having to do a bit more knowledge-gathering at the level of just getting to know what is Mormonism. But they bring a really important perspective, too, because Mormons have been swimming in the Mormon waters so long, it's hard for them even to see as outsiders. So as I would be continuing to revise this, I would also find a place and a way for each person to have more of a voice. I think that the Mormons, especially in the second semester, started to dominate the conversation. So I'd use cooperative learning kinds of exercises in order to give voice to the outsiders who could actually help the Mormons learn how to critique their own experience. And autobiography, I think, is one way in a current issues religious studies class. I wouldn't have it be the only text, but that you can illustrate and give voice to actual Mormon voices other than your own as well. So, and Refuge itself, a student at the end, one assignment that I thought was very good that Doe put together was called Professor for a Day, and each student would do a 10-minute or 15-minute presentation that Doe had structured about a particular topic, and one student did a wonderful overview of Terry Tempest Williams' Refuge and brought together every single theme that had been talked about and drew passages from Refuge and showed how she dealt with the issue of modernity and globalization, identity. And it was a fairly insightful thing, and you could see that there had been growth in students' understanding, tolerance, and understanding about Mormon identity as well. So that professor for the day assignment was really great. And I want to just end by talking about one final assignment. She had them go and analyze bookstores, Christian bookstores and Mormon bookstores, and she had them look at particular things in the bookstore and then write about that. And doing comparison contrast kinds of things. When I went to her classroom, I thought what I would have done a lot more of, too, it's very difficult, as I would have done a little bit more comparison contrast kinds of assignments so that made them look outside of the Mormonism. But going to a Christian bookstore and looking for the section on Mormonism and then going to a Mormon bookstore. So they were looking at the text, writing about, looking also at kinds of things that were sold. You know, she had them look at articles. They were really becoming educated then about who they were as Mormons or what they did or what Mormons were about. So that particular assignment, I think, was quite innovative and took her into areas that she might not have gotten in another way.
I had planned to read you some excerpts from their final bookstore projects, but there's not really time to do that. So if any of you are interested, I'd be glad to send you excerpts through email or to see what kinds of things they came up with. Does anybody, I guess what I want to do is conclude by saying that I started out by telling them there was no monolithic Mormon identity, and I ended up, because they disputed that all the way through the semester, they challenged me on that all the way through the semester, and at the end I finally said, I still believe that what I want you to know, if you had to leave here with only one thing, it would be this, that I am not trying to argue that you should change what your own personal belief is with regard to what constitutes a faithful Mormon. What I will argue is that there are others out there who are LDS whose opinion or belief about what constitutes a faithful Latter-day Saint is vastly different from yours. And you have to give them that. I mean, you have to recognize that while you may want to keep your definition of a faithful Latter-day Saint, there are others for whom that definition is vastly different. And so identity for me still remains, personally and for the class and for the church, I think, the overarching theme. Are there any questions that we can answer? I said, all the way through this last semester, I said, I never, ever want to teach this class again. I offered to teach it in the spring, and I'm teaching a couple of... They've asked me, actually, now to develop a course on We have a Women in Religion course. They want me to develop a Women in American Religion course, and I'm going to be using Laura's book. But I am going to be talking about LDS women. Them were incredulous. The ones who really do absolutely nothing about Mormonism, they were incredulous. They were disdainful at times, and I had to work with that element too. That was particularly evident in the first semester. I really had no one in the second semester. I had some non-LDS students, but they had grown up with Mormons. I've become very good friends with this very young Catholic kid who actually I think he wants to date my daughter. He won't leave her alone. But so I had to, that was a problem in the first semester. Women are in such bad shape in the Mormon church, you know. And so there was this, that dynamic. There was also the middle group who are disaffected from the church, and that was an issue of how to provide a space for those voices to help problematize, you know, so that I didn't have to be the one always saying, but. And they had personal stories too, of, well, my wife was getting beat up by her husband and her bishop told her she needed to go home to him, and, you know, so they provided those stories on their own. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
Can I just add, though, I think it's really important that the non-LDS students be in the class, and I had a sense that they were being essentially chased away from the class,
yes,
because of the hostility and defensiveness and resistance of the Mormon students. As a teacher, the next time this course gets taught, and what Doe and I would like to do, and Arizona State really is interested in developing Mormon studies. There are other universities, Claremont and other UVSC. I want to have discussions and want to begin to research and think very clearly about these questions, dilemmas, and problems. I mean, in one way, this session is dissatisfying to me, and I think this is what Doe is saying. We are not bringing a lot of answers to you. This experience was about being thrown into a situation, and because I think in one way Doe was also new to teaching, and that was not a very bright thing of ASU to do in one sense, to throw somebody into... I want to explain that, okay, because she handled it really, really well. I'm sorry if that came off. If there was somebody who was going to do it and be competent, it was going to be her. But this was this from the very beginning is going to be a politically and personally charged classroom, all right? Just as it would be, I taught African American literature at a time, and as a white graduate student woman teaching African American literature, you have to work much harder to gain credibility and authority in that classroom in a way, because those, at this particular historical moment, they're very charged issues. You know, I don't feel the same kind of charged way in other kinds of settings. So Doe did great under very difficult circumstances, and I think she needs also we need a larger conversation about teaching Mormon studies, because it's an important kind of activity, and I admire ASU that they've said, hey, this is a Mormon enclave. ASU is very interested in South American studies, and so they have made a new commitment to pursuing very in very pointed ways the study of Mormonism. They're taking it seriously. I think that's a wonderful step, and I hope to be a part of it, and I think that they need to offer a variety of cross-listed courses. I want to develop a course in autobiography studies, Western women, and have Mormonism be a part of that, and at some point have that. But there needs to be a variety of courses. Holly?
Okay. Yeah. We're actually gone over now, so...
Well, if you need to go.
Yeah.
And I don't have anywhere to go now, so if you want to call the rest
of the class. I've taught Mormon literature at universities where I might have one or at the most two students in the class who grew up LDS and only one of those still active or something like that. But when you were talking, what it reminded me of is district meetings on my mission, and I just felt that horrible nausea in my stomach of having, you know, 19-year-old guys who've never left the United States until they went on their mission. But oh my God, they know this. They know it. And when there's that kind of knowledge There's not room for exploration. And the technique I finally adopted is just to bear testimony back. And one thing, and saying, especially I could just imagine myself in a class if a student said, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt this, this, and that. I would say, well, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that that kind of reaction is going to get you a C, so you better work a little harder. And, you know, whether or not, even that way you could push them towards it. But bearing testimony of other things. Well, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, having lived longer, having explored these things in other ways, that your reaction's inadequate. And because what they're always trying to do is trump you with this revelation they've had. So if you can play that game and trump them back, look, I'm older than you, and I know this game you're playing, and it is a game, and you're cheating, and I can cheat back too. And furthermore, you're going to get a crappy grade. It's not because I've been teaching long enough. I've taught 15 years, and I give good grades to students who disagree with me fundamentally. The question is not, do they agree with me? The question is, do they demonstrate their disagreement in a thoughtful way? Do they at least ask certain questions? Can they construct a defense that is not simply trumping somebody with a testimony?
I think your point is well taken, and one of the things that is probably underlying this is a power struggle between students and teacher and about authority. And students, well, these Mormon students are always also going to try to trump you with God says so. And that's what the question of is, do you think God is sexist? Because essentially they're saying God has set up the church for women to be subordinate. And so if you think that they are, well, God said so, so you think that God is sexist. And so you have to get at the underlying assumptions then for that those students, but I would not set myself, I would try all sorts of ways of avoiding those kinds of power conflicts. I've tried to diffuse those with some key teaching strategies, and it's those teaching strategies that I think need to be more developed to teach courses like this. We need to do research on those kinds of things that work, and that's what I want to engage people in.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attendance.